sound of Booker T and the MGs, the name of the song, Time is Tight, and it always is on this show because, oh, we're so lucky to have such great guests here. Good afternoon, everybody. Stan Turner with you here. Delighted to have your company on this gray Saturday. We'll try to put some real zest and zip into it for you. We've got some great guests here, as we always try to do, so thank you for being with us here. I got to say hello to my friend over there. Kyle, how you doing, kid?
I am doing just fine.
Are you a Super Bowl nut, sir?
I'm one of those that watches for the commercials.
Okay, that's not necessarily a bad thing, my friend. Great, right. I'm kind of in that ballpark, too. Well, folks, around the bottom of the hour this noon, we'll delve into you could call it a novel way of raising money for a noble cause. That cause is history. It takes, of course, hard work, diligence, and a passion to collect, preserve, and interpret the pieces of our past. It also, folks, takes money. Yeah. The Washington County Historical Society raises money in one way, well, many ways, but one way that sounds downright mad, crazy. It has to do with serving ice cream outdoors in sub-zero cold along a windswept riverbank. And it actually works. We'll hear from the folks who really put the ice in ice cream for a really good cause. That's about a half hour from now. But first, well, this weekend, we were just talking about it. It seems just about everybody is all gaga about the Super Bowl, pro football's big super blowout. But did you realize that spring training begins early next month? That's right. The Twins and other major league teams will start running the bases, taking a few swings, and toning up some dormant muscles for another long season. Let's see, the Twins, I believe, by the calendar I saw, open spring training in Fort Myers, Florida, on March the 3rd. That's not very far off, is it, huh? Think of the Twins and their storied past. What a history it is. Great, memorable players of bygone years. Killebrew, Allison, Herbeck, Puckett, Oliva, Carew, Winfield. Those last four, Puckett, Oliva, Carew, Winfield, well, in common with the other stars, these guys had big talent, but they had another thing in common. They were men of color. It's true that when they played, that racial segregation was long gone in professional sports. At least it was officially gone. But these players knew one thing for sure. The door to racial equality in sports had been pried open slowly and painfully years before by guys of color who endured the sting of racism but set out to play for the love of the game. Their stories have gone largely untold until recent times, that is. And here in Minnesota, we have a new book that helps uncover many of those forgotten or untold stories. And we have Frank Wright, that's Frank White, to thank for that. Mr. White has baseball in his blood and a passion for telling the until now many of the untold stories of black baseball in Minnesota. Frank White, thank you so much for being here. Congratulations on an important and a really, truly great book.
Stan, thank you so much. Thank you for having me, and I appreciate the visit and an opportunity to share a little bit more history.
Well, we're going to do that today. You're most welcome. Your book is so new. I'm touching it right here. It's almost, I think the ink is still drying. It was published. It rolled out, not in a book launch way, but I think it came off the presses starting just last Monday. So
yes.
Really, really newly minted book here. And we want to mention that along the way, and we'll do this a couple times during the course of our chat here, that there'll be an official book launch coming up later this month. On Tuesday, February the 23rd, 7 o'clock, and no more appropriate place, at least in the wintertime. You think in the summertime you'd have it on a ball diamond, but we can't do that this time of year, Frank. So where's it going to be? Tell us.
It's going to be at the Minnesota History Center,
yep,
on Kellogg Boulevard in St. Paul.
Yep.
And we're hoping to have a great time that evening.
You will. It'll be in the History Lounge, which
yes.
is right on the near the main entrance there.
Yes.
I've gone to many events there, and this could be another great one, no doubt about it. Your book, the title of the book, give us the title, and I kind of alluded to it in my introduction.
The title is They Play for the Love of the Game, Untold Stories of Minnesota Black Baseball.
That's right. And I'm going to ask you, where does a person find untold stories? Boy, I'll tell you, you have to be something of an archaeologist, don't you?
Excuse me, Stan. I've been very fortunate. I've I've researched African-American newspapers going back to 1885, all the way through 1960. Also some of the daily newspapers, the Tribune, the Pioneer Press. But a lot of this history comes from oral interviews with, with people that my father played with, my own personal journeys with my father, and then some people that are still alive, a little bit older than me, but with memories of some of the events that went on and some of the people.
Your dad Lewis, had a love of the game, didn't he?
Oh,
no doubt about it. He inspired you. You are a proud son, aren't you?
Oh, I'm so proud now. You know, at the time growing up, you probably don't know all of what's going on. At least I didn't, because my father really didn't talk about
it.
Quiet guy. Yeah. And but I used to get to see him play, and I would hear the guys around him talk about how good he was, and then even afterwards, there are still people that talk fondly of my father.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. He was a catcher, wasn't he? Huh?
Yes. Yeah.
And he might have gone to a team called the Yankees, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. Huh?
Right. Yeah.
Frank, wait, could you read a little bit from your book for us?
Sure.
You're a boy. You're I tell you what. You're just all aglow. You're gaga over this. My dad's a player. So many people say nice things about him, and they're sincere. And this is kind of your awakening, isn't it?
Yeah.
Why don't you read from your book a little bit?
Okay. Thanks, Dan. When I was a young kid, I never heard of the Negro Leagues or the amazing black players from those teams like Satchel Paige, Double Duty Radcliffe, Hilton Smith, or the great home run hitter and catcher Josh Gibson. I only knew of the major leagues like Jackie Robinson, Roy Campanella, and Don Newcomb, and I had seen Charlie Neal play for the St. Paul Saints. One time in about 1959 or 60, my father took me to a hot stove banquet, a gathering of fans and some former players to talk about baseball during the cold winter months of the off season. At the time, I didn't know why we went. But all these years later, I now understand my father's connection to the sport and that he knew a lot of the old players who showed up.
Yeah, and they held him in high regard, didn't they, huh?
They did. And
he was a humble man, didn't talk about himself, no bragging around your household.
He really didn't. And so later on in one of the stories about 1987 also, they had an event at the Minnesota History Center. And I took my father. My father wanted me to go along, and I still have a picture. In fact, there's a picture of the book of the gentlemen that were there, Jim Griffin, Larry Bubba Brown, a guy named Red Lefty Evans, Leroy Hardiman, Harry Davis, and my father. And as I'm standing listening to these stories of the Negro League teams that used to barnstorm through Minneapolis and St. Paul and Minnesota, Jim Robinson says to me, he said, you know, they used to come and get your dad to play. I said, who? I was like, who are you talking about? Yeah. And he said, those teams, those Negro League teams. I said, really? And on the drive home, I said, Dad, Jim tells me that you used to play with these teams. I said, how come you never told me? He said, it wasn't important.
Oh,
Once in a while,
dads are wrong.
Yeah, I was like, oh my God.
Wow.
I mean, just,
wow.
You know, so that was maybe the first time that I'd really understood or heard that he had actually played, or guys used to come and get him to play with them or against them. So,
Frank White, how far back does baseball go in this country? Not you know, racially segregated, just baseball itself. 19th century, obviously, huh?
Yeah, somewhere probably mid 1800s.
Okay.
Out east, and you know, depending upon who you believe and where the game started, you know, can't remember the guy's name, but anyway, you know, did it come from across the water in a game called Rounders and all of those things?
Yeah.
It's a great history, and as it spread west from the East Coast, you know, it spread all over the country.
Let's talk about the racial divide in baseball.
Okay.
Of course, the blacks were invited out. You can't play with the white teams. That was true for just about everything back then,
especially
the 19th century and before. How did the Negro Leagues or the colored leagues come to be? These guys said, well, listen, we're going to play. We can't play with the white guys, but we're going to form our own leagues,
right?
Our own teams.
Right, and there were various attempts along the way, but probably the most famous is Rube Foster in 1920 at the YMCA down near to where the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum is today, right around the corner. Got about eight teams together, and they formed the Negro National League. And Rube Foster was the guy that ran it and got a certain percentage of tickets and all of that and equipment. But they formed a league, and from there, other leagues attempted to start. But they were great ball players, and they were organized baseball for African Americans.
And they'd travel from town to town like the white teams would, and do everything the white teams did. Did they draw? What kind of attendance would they get at their games?
I know that in some cities they maybe even outdrew the major league teams. I know in talking to Julio Becker, who played with the Washington Senators and then they came here, he said, you know, that the teams when they would play in the Senators stadium there in D.C., the black teams would outdraw their local teams. And then if you talk about some of the East-West games that were played at Comiskey Park and those places like that, you know, they drew 60,000 fans.
Wow.
And just packed, you know. So mainly African-Americans, but a lot of white fans also.
We're talking with Frank White, author of a wonderful new book, They Played for the Love of the Game, Untold Stories of Black Baseball in Minnesota. Frank, rich in photographs as well as history as well as text here, and some of the photographs caught me by surprise. Some of the early teams, white teams, you see some black faces in there, and those black guys, I'll tell you what, the white guys on the team for the team photo, they got their arms around these guys too. I mean, it's not as though, oh, we'll put them in a corner, you know, the black guy goes over there. No, they were integrated in more than one way. Tell us how common was this?
Well, especially here in Minnesota, there are probably at least two players that come to mind. Mm-hmm. Bud Fowler, who actually played here in Stillwater, mm-hmm. and was recruited to play here as he traveled and played here. Very outstanding player.
Would that have been with a white team?
With a white team, okay. Yes, at the time. And then also Walter Ball ended up playing with a couple different teams here in Minnesota. But these guys were stars on those all-white teams. And so
how'd they get along, the teammates?
I think for the most part they got along well, because if you read some of the stories, they say, you know, they didn't really care. They just wanted to know, could they play baseball?
The love of the game.
Exactly.
The perfect
exactly.
title for your book.
Yeah. And in fact, another guy is Billy Williams.
Williams, Mike. Yeah. Those of us who have covered the state capitol over the years, I was just a Cub reporter, but I remember him, and I didn't realize Billy, who was an aide to many governors of the state of Minnesota.
Yeah,
he was a baseball guy.
Outstanding baseball player, also an outstanding athlete, went to Mechanic Arts High School in St. Paul. And as he, around the turn of the century, I've got some photos of him from like 1895, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. At one point in time, the Orioles tried to recruit him. And if you ever saw a picture, if you see the picture in the book, he looks like he could be Native American.
Okay.
And so the Orioles said, you know, we want you to come and play, mm-hmm. and we're only concerned about you hitting the ball.
Yeah.
But they said, you know, you might want to consider saying that you're Native American. And so it really made a tough decision for Billy, because at the time he was offered the job with Governor Johnson in the beginning.
Oh, wow.
He was like, well, do I go? And if they find out, then I'm going to be out of a job.
If they find out, he's
African American. Yes, yeah, I'm sorry. And so at that time, it was pretty difficult for African Americans to get a steady job. And so he decided to take the job with his friend, the governor.
Okay.
And the rest kind of for him is history.
Other standout players. Bobby Marshall. Let's talk about Bobby.
Bobby Marshall might be considered one of the greatest athletes of all time in Minnesota, and it's so hard, Stan, as you know, today there's always the comparison, but Bobby was a professional football player, professional baseball player, and he played hockey, I think, professionally. He was a professional cyclist.
The Renaissance man.
Oh, he was like, it was, and he ended up being an attorney after he graduated from college at the University of Minnesota.
That's amazing.
Tremendous athlete early on.
Yeah, right. Someone to be proud of from the state of Minnesota.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
I love this name. You mentioned him earlier in the show. Double Duty Radcliffe. This is a great moniker. Double Duty. Okay, black player, part of the Negro Leagues. Double Duty. How'd he come by that?
He said he tells the story. And in fact, I've got if people come to the opening, I've got a disc and where a video when Double Duty was at a hospital bank when he says, "Let me tell you how I got the name." He said, "We played a doubleheader, and the first game, Satchel pitched, and I caught."
Satchel Paige.
Satchel Paige.
The Satchel Paige, okay.
And he said, and so Satchel won, and I forgot the score. And then the second game, he said, we had a reprieve. We had a beer and a hot dog, and played the second game, and I pitched, and I won that game. And so the next day, Damon Runyon, one of the famous reporters said, "It's worth the price of two to come and see Double Duty Radcliffe play." And so that's how he got his
name. A doubleheader. He caught the first game. He pitched the second.
Yeah,
game
and he was. Himself. If you look at his stats, you kind of wonder why he might not be in the Hall of Fame. He's one of those other question marks of. There are still some Negro League players that maybe deserve to be in the Hall of Fame.
You might take them maybe out of that, too.
Yes.
Double Duty Radcliffe. Some of the team names in the Negro or Black Leagues back then, some of them were downright demeaning. I think one of them was called the Clowns, right?
And Indianapolis Clowns, and, you know, and the Black Crackers, let me see, the Crawfords, the Kansas City Monarchs. So some of those team names, they named themselves.
They were okay, but Gophers, Giants were preceded by the word colored.
Right,
they?
Yes, mm-hmm. exactly. Right. When you talk about the Indianapolis Clowns, you know, a lot of the barnstorming stories, even here in Minnesota, as those teams would come through here, or even teams like when my father played, and the guys would barnstorm to make extra money. And so when they'd go to a town, you know, play, the local teams would be thinking these guys were going to come through and they were going to be the entertainers, like the Harlem Globetrotters,
that type of stuff,
only to find out that they were good baseball players. And in some stories, when the team started to win and kind of thrashed the other team, they stopped the game and said, "No, you guys got to go," because they didn't want to be embarrassed.
Were these black teams playing white teams when they come to a town?
Yes, all white teams.
What kind of reaction from the probably mostly white people in the stands? What happened? Was there any ugly incidents?
There probably was at times. I know early on, you know, it was probably here in Minnesota, very early on, many people hadn't seen an African-American person, a black person, a Negro at the time. And so there was probably a novelty. For some of the people that did, you know, they knew these guys were good athletes and they wanted to play the best teams.
Sure.
And they would split the gate. The way they did this was when you barnstorm, there was a split 60-40. The winning team would get 60%. And the losing team would get 40.
So if the blacks won, they got the 60?
Right.
They actually did do that, even in these times of strict segregation.
Yes.
Now, let me ask you about umpiring.
Okay.
You touched on this in the game. I'm guessing that the umpire was always probably white, most often or not?
Most of the time here in Minnesota.
Okay.
I know sometimes the Negro League teams, when they would travel and they would play other black teams, you know, some of the former players, that they would also carry umpires with them. But here in Minnesota, they were more than likely white.
Did they call them as they saw them, Frank, or was something loaded on one side or the other?
I'm sure that many times the black teams felt that they were playing against maybe 10 players and not 9. So
the 10th being the umpire,
right,
who maybe temporarily went, had some seeing problems. Fill in the blanks.
Yes.
There is a place, and you mentioned this in some lovely photos of your father, in Kansas City, Missouri, right? And this is home of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, it's in Kansas City, Missouri, on the Missouri side. And you have some wonderful, wonderful stories about one of your visits there. It was a time when I think your father was ill, And you and your brother went down there on some business, but you had to go to the museum for sure. And there was a 10-year-old boy, I think he was about 10, right?
Right.
And man, did this kid know. He knew a lot about the Negro Leagues. And it's interesting to note, and it's relevant here, he's white.
Yes.
The kid's white.
Yes.
And that had to do your heart good, huh?
You know, and it was actually during this interview with Buck O'Neill and my father by Kwame McDonald. I happened to be the cameraman, and I'm standing there, and this young kid was next to me. And as they took a little break, I turned to the kid, and he was standing with his mom, and he looked at me and said, "Man, do you know who these guys are? These guys are Negro League players." This kid was so excited. I was unbelievable. It could have been Kirby Puckett or whatever the star of the time was.
This little guy knew these people.
Oh, he did, and his mom says he knows everything about the Negro Leagues. Uh-huh. And so it really... Mm-hmm. It did do my heart well and made me feel very proud, obviously, because my father was one of those individuals. But for this young kid at about his age to say that he knew about the Negro Leagues was a great testament.
Frank, our time is running so fast here. Back to your father again.
Okay.
And the New York Yankees. Now, your dad was a great catcher.
Yes.
And was there a chance he could have joined the pinstripe crowd there, the Yanks? Huh?
He told me one time, and when I pushed him a little bit more on the story, when I said, "Well, Dad, how come you wouldn't tell me?" And then he said, "Well, you know, actually," he said, "the Yankees offered me, tried to recruit me," and I was like, "What?" So, and he said, "Yeah," and he said, "You know, I would have been before Elston Howard."
Wow.
So I was like, "Oh my goodness!" And it, you know, in my imagination, what would that really be like? You know, we'd be living in New York, and all of those kinds of things. But my dad was that good, and you know, so it was really.
Why didn't it happen, Frank?
Well, what he told me was he needed to have an operation on his elbow. Mm-hmm. And they said, you know, we can do this, but it's not like today. It's not guaranteed. It could be that when you're all done with the surgery, you might not be able to play again. So he chose not to have the surgery, and they weren't willing to pursue the contract.
This was late 40s.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, he still is a heck of a player.
He's one of the best.
No doubt about it. The cover of your book, your new book, "They Played for the Love of the Game." Wonderful photograph on the front. It might have been lost to history, but for somebody going through somebody's material during an estate sale or going through a deceased person's goods, private items.
Right.
And here we see, this is a cropped photograph. It's a team picture of a black team, and the cropped picture shows three of them. Wonderful photograph. Tell us about this.
Oh,
What year?
The photo is from the 1923 Uptown Sanitary Shop. The Uptown Sanitary Shop was in downtown St. Paul. It was a cleaner's. But this photo right here, these three gentlemen, if you look at the photo, I love it.
I do too.
And even though I saw the photo many times, I mean, you look at these guys, I think you see pride. I think you see...
I think dignity and confidence.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, I mean, each of the individuals.
I don't see
has
any swagger. I don't see any, you know, saying, "Hey, look at me," kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't think so.
They're looking straight into the camera and they're saying, "Well, we're baseball players, man. We love the game."
You know, when I saw this cover, when they shared, this is going to be the cover, and I had seen this photo many times as a team photo, but. The way this photo is, it's just a wonderful photo. So I hope when people see it, I think they love it as much as I do. And it's a great depiction of the team and of the time.
It says it all, really. Photos are worth 1,000 or 2,000 words.
Yes.
Well, it's a wonderful photograph. You're a wonderful storyteller and author too, Frank White. Thank you so much. Remind you, everybody, that Frank White will be conducting his book launch, and he'll be doing a PowerPoint. You'll be doing some storytelling. What better place? The Minnesota Historical Society, the Minnesota History Center. It's right on Kellogg, you know, what is it, 345 Kellogg, right below the big St. Paul Cathedral.
Absolutely.
You can't miss it. Frank will be holding forth at 7 o'clock Tuesday, February 23rd, not too far off, in the History Lounge there. And my friend, I plan to be there with you. Okay?
Dan, thank you for so much, and I really appreciate the opportunity to come and talk a little bit more about black baseball.
You are welcome. Our honor. And by the way, before we let you go, what are you wearing on your head right now?
I have a Twins cap on, and on the side it says "Celebrate Diversity."
I like that. And it's time to play ball, isn't
yes,
it, Frank?
Yes.
Thank you very much, Frank. All right. Please stay with us. We're going to be talking history of another kind right after this.
Jaime's Haberdashery presents the Jaime's Oath.
On my honor, I will dress my best, be clean in my speech and actions, live my life honestly, take care of my body for good build and fit, to help keep my country strong by supporting local merchants. Through the words and actions of my haberdasher, I will trust.
So, gentlemen, will you take the Jaime's Oath? Jaime's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street, downtown St. Paul, at Jaime's.com.
At the Stan Turner Show, we love good stories, and there's no better place to find them than Valley Bookseller in downtown Stillwater. Valley Bookseller is an independent bookstore with knowledgeable and friendly staff who love books. Tell them what you like to read, and they'll make terrific recommendations just for you. Also, discover one of the finest children's collections in the entire Twin Cities. Valley Bookseller. Great books, great people. 217 North Main in Stillwater. Online at valleybookseller.com.
Timeless tastes and timeless ingredients are why people ask for Wolf's. So which Wolf's will you ask for? The Strong Golden Belgian Style Ale is light-bodied, yet seductively strong warmer. Maybe it's the Berlin-style Weiss, the sour wheat ale that's dubbed the Champagne of the North. Or perhaps it's the German-style ale, Weizenbach. The dark wheat ale brewed to box strength. Whichever, make sure you ask for Wolf's. Stillwater's original craft beer. Wolf Brewing Company, Stillwater, Minnesota.
Guten Tag. This is Stan Turner, and I would like to personally invite you to join me on a tour of the Alpine highlights of Austria and Germany this September. We'll stay in quaint Austrian and Bavarian villages. We'll visit Innsbruck as a local guide introduces us to the old town and the Golden Dachl. We'll explore Neuschwanstein Castle, Walt Disney's inspiration for Cinderella's castle. And what would a fall trip to Bavaria be without partaking in Oktoberfest? We'll visit Munich and join in on one of the world's largest festivals, Oktoberfest. These are just a few of the highlights of our 8-day, 7-night tour of the Alpine highlights of Austria and Germany. Airfare, transportation, and daily breakfast and dinner are included. However, seating is limited. To join me, please call Defined Destinations at 651-398-9358. That's 651-398-9358 or online at defineddestinations.com. Here we go, Stan Turner. This is part two of our Saturday program. Thank you very much for your company. We do appreciate it. It is 30 degrees, and that is our... Well, I guess not our predicted high. I think 35 is the predicted high for this afternoon under partly sunny skies. Because a lot of people are on the move more than ever, this being Super Bowl weekend, let me give you the full forecast. Tonight, overcast, overnight low, 30 degrees. Now things get interesting on Sunday, Super Bowl Sunday. Chance of snow before 11 tomorrow morning, then rain and snow likely between 11 a.m. and 4 p.m. Then, we're not done yet, then snow likely after 4 p.m. New snow accumulation, less than a half inch possible. We're not talking about much, just messing up the highways a little bit, that's all. Let's see, a high Super Bowl Sunday tomorrow near 36 degrees. Note of caution, there'll be breezy condition, winds gusting to 30 miles per hour. So if you're out there in the street, you know, playing catch during halftime, you know, be careful, be aware of that. I'm going to give you a Sunday night, tomorrow night's forecast as well. Snow likely, mainly before 3 in the morning, areas of blowing snow. Overnight low tomorrow night, 15 degrees into early Monday. And again, those gusty winds are going to stay with us at times up to 35 miles per hour. And tomorrow night, new snow accumulation of around an inch possible. So take it easy out there. Throttle back a little bit. Could get a little dicey out there on the highway. Monday, a slight chance of snow. Areas of blowing snow, though. Overcast. What's new? We have these gray days. End on end on end. High Monday near 20 degrees. And again, the weather will be blustery. Strong winds. Tuesday, partly sunny. High near 15. 15 above. Going to cool off.
Actually, these are pretty seasonable, normal temperatures for this time of day. Wednesday in the Twin Cities near 15 and 19 on Thursday. So there you go. Right now, 30 degrees, heading for a high today of about 35 degrees. Right now, we're heading for more history. Wasn't it fun talking with Frank White and that wonderful new book of his on the black teams here in Minnesota throughout the decades? And now we're going to talk more history. We always enjoy looking backwards and, you know, as we look forward here with Brent Peterson, the top banana at the Washington County Historical Society. Brent, welcome aboard. Thanks for coming down.
Thanks for having me, Stan.
Have you thawed out from your winter ice cream social last January 16th, my friend, huh?
No.
The Windchill folks, and this was an outdoor event, a fundraiser for Brent's Washington County Historical Society. The Windchill that day estimated at 25 below zero. You're standing on the banks of the St. Croix River in Stillwater, scooping up and serving ice cream. Mm-hmm. And did anybody come, Brent? Did
there were 300-400 great people. We had even a makeshift vintage baseball game down there.
Was everybody sober?
I hope so.
Yep, okay.
I mean,
we
had ice cream, we had hot chocolate, we had coffee, we had chili, we had root beer for root beer floats.
Nothing is floating in that ice.
Well, huh? You know, a winter ice cream social is the best time to have it because, one, the ice cream does not melt.
This is true.
And, two, no mosquitoes.
No mosquitoes.
I can guarantee you there was not one mosquito down there.
Two compelling reasons to hold a fundraiser outside with ice cream in January, and I assume you scooped up some money, too, for the cause.
Well, huh? You know, it was not as good as last year, but those hearty souls that did come out, they were very generous, and we appreciate it.
They always are. I just gave you my check for my renewal on my membership.
Well, thank you.
So that'll help a little bit. And what you usually say is that all? Why don't you up your membership?
Well, either
I said it for you.
Thank you, thank you. You don't have to up the membership. You can just give a donation.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll do that.
You can do that online at our website and everything.
What would the website be?
Oh, it's WCHSMN.org.
The show is turning into a fundraiser.
Yeah, we try.
You brought along a photograph from the Outdoor Ice Cream Social Fundraiser. Paint us a word picture here.
Well, there's a vintage baseball player down in Afton. His name is Ray Hansen, but he goes by Stash. And if you saw him, you kind of would understand. Not only does he have the big stash, but he's got the full beard. And, well, it's basically ice.
Yeah.
He actually was running around trying to breathe, and it all froze. And it was interesting. But there was a lot of children down there, a lot of kids having fun with the baseball, snowballs, and the ice cream.
Okay. And it looks like his eyeballs are frozen in the sockets, but a bit of a grin there, man.
Well, he always has
a grimace.
He's always got a grin. We don't know why,
salute you all for doing that craziness there and getting money for a noble cause, the Washington County Historical Society. There's a historical society in each of Minnesota's 87 counties, and they're all funded to one degree or another by the county board in those counties, except one county that doesn't get a dime or a cent
from their county.
And what would that county be?
That would be Washington County.
That'd be the one that
we receive no annual assistance from our county commissioners.
Now, I don't want to belabor it, but why?
What I was told is that history is a non-core function of government.
What is a core function of government?
And a core function, as I've been told, is whatever three of the five county commissioners say is a core function of government. So, there you have it.
Well, you cut right to the core, didn't you?
Exactly.
Brent, we've got the 2015 season behind us for all of your doings at the Washington County Historical Society, which is not funded at all by the county. How'd you like that for a little
thank you. I appreciate that.
So what... We want to know what's going on. We've had the fundraiser now in January, you crazy people, you, and give us a little scenario of what's going to unfold this year.
Well, right now, this is actually a very exciting time for the Historical Society. This is what everyone would say is a slow time because the museums aren't open, but it's not really slow. The museums are pulled apart, the displays, and we're putting new displays all together for this coming season.
Right, great.
So our site managers are getting all that taken care of. And in the meantime, we have our annual meeting coming up in March.
Mm-hmm.
So that is...
March the 31st, I believe.
Thursday, March 31st, right down here at the Water Street Inn, and we are going to have a great program. We have a high flyer coming in.
Oh, look at this.
Jumping Jim Brunzel.
Oh, my God. Ding, 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 ding. A ring, ladies and gentlemen, here.
Exactly.
And, wearing yellow trunks and when he shouldn't be.
Exactly.
It's a wrestling match.
He's just part of the high flyers with Greg Gagne and all that. But
Gagne,
he wrote Gagne.
Gagne. Greg's father, Vern.
Well, but then there was Greg Gagne.
There was.
The twins.
Right, but that's not the same guy.
But so it's spelled the same way.
Probably.
Okay, whatever.
Right.
We have him. He just has written a book called Matlands.
Matlands. Is it
all
wrestling Matt?
Exactly. Okay, so right. He's going to come and talk about his career.
This ought to be great.
And maybe some of his big matches, you know, with the other tag teams, maybe even a couple matches against a future governor that he had.
Yeah, the grapplers and the groaners.
Exactly. The claws.
Did he ever come up against Big Jesse?
I don't know. We're going to find out.
That'll be fun.
That'll be interesting.
Jumping Jim Brunzel, keynote speaker.
Absolutely.
Are you
going to
go a round or two with him, Brent? Huh?
Well, you know, at his age and my age, no.
Step over toe hold. He might put the sleeper hold on you. Huh?
That'd be nice.
Once again, folks, everybody's welcome. You don't have to be a member.
Just have to call the Historical Society for reservations.
Once we get a telephone number out there. You're going to get a lot of people coming out.
I hope so. It's
this wrestler.
651-439-5956. Or you can contact us by email through the website as well.
Water Street Inn, folks. That's right downtown Stuhl. Right by the lift bridge.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So you can see the beautiful St. Croix River and the beautiful historic lift bridge and the new one that's being built down the way.
Right. A work in progress. Another 2 or 3 years, maybe. Because your new digs for the Washington County Historical Society depend on that bridge getting finished.
Exactly.
So you can move into your new quarters, which are currently being occupied by the bridge builders.
The bridge builders have leased our building up there on South Greeley Street, and once the bridge is done, complete, and they're out of there, we are going to create the most progressive, most modern history center this state is going to have that's not funded by the county.
Only one of the 87 counties in the state of Minnesota. Have we belabored that one enough?
Maybe.
I live in the county, so I suppose I'll be hearing from the commissioners.
I'm sure I will.
Gee, look at that property tax statement go up,
exactly,
up. What else in the near future?
Okay, in the near future, after that, of course, we get the museums all spiffied up, ready to go, and we have our annual open house at the Warden's Museum on April 24th. That's when we kind of give everyone a sneak preview. It's free. We have little refreshments, and you can go around the museums, ask our volunteers and staff and board members questions about the new displays, the Warden's House, and anything else that we have going on.
Right. We don't want to assume people know all about the Warden. We talk about the Warden's House. What is it? What's its history? Where is it?
Well, the Warden's House is up on 602 North Main Street, right up
North end of Stillwater.
North end of Stillwater, exactly. And it was built in 1853. It was built as the house for the warden of the territorial prison, which was just to the north, which is now where Terrace Springs condominiums are. Mm-hmm. And there was, over time, there were 13 different wardens that lived there until 1914 when the warden and the prisoners all went down to Bayport, where the prison still is today.
Mm-hmm.
Afterwards, a deputy warden or superintendent lived in the house until 1941.
Mm-hmm.
When the Washington County Historical Society purchased the house from the state of Minnesota and has run it for as a museum ever since. So that is 75 years.
Your office is there, isn't it, Brent?
They put me up in the carriage house, which is a wonderful name for the second floor of a garage. And that's where they put me and all my fun stuff and get rid of me for a while.
Well, you know, they have to once in a while.
You know.
You're such a good guy. But we're going to talk. We're going to take a break here and come back in just a second. You know, I want to know, and we all want to know, what's in the, what we might call the attic of the Washington County Historical Society, the artifacts, the goodies, the things that you've got. Huh? Yeah. We'll talk about that right after this. At the Stan Turner Show, we love good stories, and there's no better place to find them than Valley Bookseller in downtown Stillwater. Valley Bookseller is an independent bookstore with knowledgeable and friendly staff who love books. Tell them what you like to read, and they'll make terrific recommendations just for you. Also, discover one of the finest children's collections in the entire Twin Cities.
Valley Bookseller. Great books, great people. 217 North Main in Stillwater. Online at valleybookseller.com.
Hi, I'm Kathy Wolf Swanson. And hey, I'm Pat Wolf. Our motto has always been to ask for Wolf. But Prohibition forced our family to stop brewing Wolf beer. To this day, our legacy can still be seen all over Stillwater. So it's only fitting, Kathy, that Wolf beer is back in the valley, especially after a 93-year dry spell. Don't you think Great Grandpa Joe would be so proud? I do. And that's why we invite you to visit wolfbrewing.com and click on Beer Finder to locate a store near you. And then ask for Wolf's, Stillwater's original craft beer.
Jaime's Haberdashery presents the Jaime's Oath.
On my honor, I will dress my best, be clean in my speech and actions, live my life honestly, take care of my body for good build and fit, to help keep my country strong by supporting local merchants. Through the words and actions of my haberdasher, I will trust.
So, gentlemen, will you take the Jaime's Oath? Jaime's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street, downtown St. Paul, at Jaime's.com.
Well, we are back. Thank you very much for coming for the ride this afternoon. Stan Turner with you here. We're moving right along, 1245, 30 degrees, looking for about 35. Well, we're not looking for our guest. He's been sitting right by me here for the last 15 minutes. Brent, well, don't look around, Brent. Brent Peterson, the executive director of the Washington County Historical Society, a guy who is great at his job when it comes to gathering and cataloging and interpreting history in the county here. And he also makes history fun. You're a fun storyteller. You know the stuff. And, you know, I think I've always thought that history ought to be, yes, about information, but about it should have a certain entertainment value, too, about it, because it makes it interesting. It mm-hmm. really does.
Oh, absolutely.
No doubt about it. And we have some breaking news from the Historical Society. You have just come by some information that pertains to the city of Stillwater. Mm-hmm. And what, a Medal of Honor recipient we didn't know was from here? Is
right.
That it? Wow.
Yesterday, a gentleman walked into my office and asked me if I knew anything about a gentleman named Albert McMillan, and I knew about an early person named Samuel McMillan from Stillwater, who was a U.S. senator, and this is actually Samuel's son.
Oh,
and he goes, "Well, Albert, did you know that he had won the Medal of Honor?" I go, "No, for what, when, where? Tell me." Mm-hmm. And he had just a little bit of information, and I went on the Medal of Honor website, and sure enough. Yeah. It's Albert Walter McMillan, and he was born in Stillwater back in 1862. Mm-hmm. And he joined the Army back in the 1880s, 1887 or so. And then he went out with, I think it says, Company E of the 7th Cavalry. Mm-hmm. And they went to fight the Native Americans out there, and he was at the Battle of Wounded Knee.
Ooh, wow. That conjures all kinds of emotions.
Oh, it does, it does. Yeah. And then, he was given the Medal of Honor, and this is what it says, what he did. It says, while engaged with the Native Americans concealed in a ravine, he assisted the men on a skirmish line, directed their fire, encouraged them by example, and used every effort to dislodge the enemy.
How did this information about a Medal of Honor recipient from Stillwater go unnoticed all these years?
Well, I was looking at the some of the information about Albert McMillan, and I saw in a couple notations that it listed his birthplace as Baltimore, but it's actually Stillwater. Mm-hmm. And we would see a couple of those, and we do know that it's Stillwater, Minnesota, since his father is in the census mm-hmm. of 1860 here and mm-hmm. everything like that. And
Baltimore and Stillwater, that's not even close, is it?
No, it's not that
goodness.
Close,
no,
but
no.
Boy, let me tell you, it was really exciting to learn that there's such military history in Stillwater. I mean, going from the Civil War all the way to present day, there's the history of military service from the people from this area, and it is so incredible. And I always kind of wondered why there wasn't one because of all that service.
Yeah.
And sure enough, here we go.
Here we go. Here we go, indeed. I mentioned a bit ago about what's in the attic of the Washington County Historical Society. People donate mm-hmm. artifacts to you. They come from all places. Sometimes, I don't know if your county does, but some counties have a few extra bucks to purchase some things they want for their displays. You're laughing.
So yeah, I'm laughing
probably,
at that one.
You probably don't have such a
no,
fund.
We
no
do not have
fund.
Such a fund.
So you rely on donations.
Exactly.
Give us some of the things you've got. Maybe stranger people.
Stranger pieces. It's a lot of these things are just fantastic, mm-hmm. and it's we get so many. But We have a lot of great boats. We have a canoe. We have a birch bark canoe. We have a bateau. We have a lot of things to do with the lumber industry. Some of the things, we just don't know what they are. They look quite medieval.
Mm-hmm.
They have, you know, they have hooks and clamps, and we just look at it like, okay, uh-huh. And they weigh like...
Sounds like something from lumberjack days in 1975.
Well, yeah, it could be, but...
medieval?
Very medieval. But it is such an interesting cast of items that span all social walks of life. Mm-hmm. Told, you know, from the prim and proper Victorian, the fans and the hat wow. pins and all Ooh. This. And then you get the lumberjacks, you know, with the leather boots with basically nails in the bottom of them wow. so they could go... hop from one log to another mm-hmm, log, mm-hmm. and then you have so many miscellaneous things that you look at it and say, what is this? And every couple of weeks we have an e-newsletter that goes out, and Sean, who puts that together, always puts a picture of, what the heck is this? And, you know, people always, they respond, we get a great response, and they say, are we right? And we're saying, we don't know.
We don't know. How do we know if you're right? We don't know what they are.
You know, from ice people, you know, they used to bring blocks of ice around, and they take it out of the river or the lakes during the winter time.
The Iceman. For ice boxes, the early refrigerators.
Exactly.
Right?
But they had special scrapers, and we had this scraper. It was this was the medieval thing I was thinking about. It had this big blade on it, but it was, we figured out that it was for shaving the ice blocks. And molding them so they could stack better, mm-hmm. and it was just quite interesting. You go into the best place to go in the warden's house, in my opinion, when you go through there, is go into the kitchen area.
Really?
The kitchen area has all sorts of just weird things.
It's like a torture chamber.
It really does. they say baskets, but I don't know what would you put in these baskets. And then you have these things to cut meat, and you pound meat, and then the vacuum cleaners are just funnier than all get out. And these things are these are modern tools back in the
sure,
day.
Yeah. They were commonplace.
They were.
Nothing odd or funny about them to the people who used them.
And then, of course, Stillwater is also known as the birthplace of the pop-up toaster. So,
is it really?
Yes. So we have some...
Kyle, did you know that? No, Kyle shaking had no idea.
Well, we have some of the early pop-up toasters. It was invented here in Stillwater. And we have some of the ones that weren't pop-up toasters.
Why would... pop-up toasters be invented here?
Well, I guess the guy didn't want to wait. You had to, when you did the toast, you had to watch it because you had to turn the piece of bread so to toast on either side.
Yeah.
And if you were, veered away, all of a sudden it's burned.
Sure.
And then the house burns down, and so you had to watch it. So the guy who worked up at the mechanical place up north on North Main Street said, "This is terrible." So he made channels and he did a thing, and he invented the pop-up toaster.
Necessity being the mother of, you know, the rest, huh?
Oh, it's so much.
So pop-up toaster, I think we ought to put a sign in the entrance to the town here.
I do, too.
Minnesota's birthplace and home of the first pop-up toaster.
Well, I think that would draw a lot of tourists.
How many goodies do you have in the attic there?
Well, we're still...
Thousands upon thousands.
We are still going through our very first inventory.
You've never done an inventory?
Not in 80-some years, no. And we have, I think we're well over the 20,000 mark right now. And we've only been at the warden's house. Remember, we do have the Hay Lake School up in Scandia and the Johannes Eriksson Log House, which are both very full. And so we have yet to touch anything up there. It's just amazing.
You might find Jimmy Hoffa in there somewhere.
Well, we're thinking.
You know, he's been missing for years.
We're hoping for, you know, something like that. Or, you know, maybe find some hidden gold, which mm-hmm. would be really nice.
We were talking to Frank White earlier in the hour today about the about baseball.
Oh,
and
yes.
You have more than a passing interest and association with baseball because you belong to a vintage baseball team here.
The reigning state champion.
Is that like reigning? Like reigning from the
No,
sky?
No. We have been the state champions now for 14 years, and no one has ever approached us to challenge us because we're that good.
Really? Do you play on the team?
Well, of course.
You sure you do?
Of course. Yeah. I sit on the bench and warm it up.
That's what I thought.
You know. But our vintage baseball team is going to start with some great practices in early May, and then we're going to play our big game is at Lumberjack Days again. We have 10 other clubs coming, mm-hmm. and to play at the old athletic field where some of the early baseball actually played here in Stillwater.
Instead of bats, you'll be using double-bladed axes, I suppose.
Well, probably.
Up,
you know,
something like
that's
that,
probably right? Why no one wants to play us.
And you play under, what, 1860 rules?
1860 rules. Mm-hmm. It was published in 1860. And
what are the rules, Brent?
Well, some of the rules are that there are no balls or strikes called, but you can strike out if you swing and cleanly miss the ball three times. The batter is out if the player is out in the outfield, catch the ball on the fly or the first bounce.
First bounce.
Yes. Okay. So, and of course, in 1860, gloves were not invented yet, mm-hmm. so we play barehanded.
Wow. How about cursing on the field?
That is not wanted, and the umpire can fine you a day's wage.
Really?
What
would that be for you if you got fined?
They give me money.
Okay.
You
play teams around the area here, and sometimes you go out of state, don't you?
We do. We have we play the Menominee Blue Caps and sometimes the Milwaukee Cream Cities.
The what?
The Milwaukee Cream Cities.
Cream Cities. Mm-hmm.
We have played the Indianapolis Blues, mm-hmm. and we've also gone to Ohio where we played the Ohio Village Muffins.
Sounds like a terrifying team.
Yeah,
we're up against the Muffins tomorrow.
And actually, the Stillwater Club, we beat the Muffins. So we, matter if they were chocolate.
Eat them for lunch almost, don't you?
Chocolate chip or blueberry, we don't
Brent Peterson, Brent T. Peterson, not to be confused with Brent X. Peterson.
That's where
so
the
many
X
Brent
marks
Petersons.
Spot.
Right. What else is coming up this with your historical, I call it a hysterical society.
Well,
we
have so much fun, and we're really getting excited about this year's beer tasting that comes up at
that can get me excited too. All right, let's talk about that.
That's up at Hay Lake School every year on the third Saturday of June, and we certainly get a lot of great breweries, including the Wolf Brewing Company.
Oh, hey, Wolf, I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yes. Right,
because they sponsor our Monday through Friday All Request and Dedication program here on Club 1220 KLBB.
they are great. They come up every year.
The Wolf Brewing Company does?
Yes, and they are right there, and they are just excited.
What's their name again?
The Wolf Brewing Company.
Thank you.
Also... mentioned the Wolf Brewing Company, which is gets back to Frank White's book.
Yeah.
Stillwater had a great team that was sponsored by the Joseph Wolf Brewing Company back around the early part of the 20th century. And Walter Ball was a black pitcher throughout the state up in St. Cloud. He came to Stillwater, and the Joseph Wolf Brewery beat him. It was like 2-1. It was one of the only times Walter Ball lost in 1902.
And the Brewers got his number.
And the Wolf Brewing Company sponsored baseball team beat him. But then the Wolves went up to St. Cloud and lost to him. But
revenge.
But it was a great type of history of baseball like that with the beer with the breweries always sponsoring the local team.
That's fun. What else is coming up here? What do we look forward to this year?
Oh, this year is great because not only is the Warden's House 75 years old as a museum, so it's the second oldest house museum in Minnesota. We are putting together two or three publications to be done by the end of this year. One of them talks about the punitive expedition into Mexico.
The punitive expedition?
Into Mexico. And the Company K, Stillwater Boys, went down there with Black Jack Pershing.
Now, wait a minute. Punitive means suspected or maybe it happened, right?
Yeah, well,
rumored, sort of thing.
Well, there's one guy in Mexico. It was named Ferdinand Francisco, but he knew him better as Pancho Villa.
Pancho Villa.
He kind of came into New Mexico, kind of did a little raiding and went out, and then that got the ire up of Black Jack Pershing. And we're going to do a book about that because we have letters from one of the majors that was down in that New Mexico area chasing Pancho Villa.
Wow.
No, he was the fastest general in all of Mexico at the time.
Yeah, certainly was.
And
Patton was running through Germany. Yeah.
And they never caught him because they came back because we were getting into World War One.
Yeah, no kidding. So that's coming off the presses. What else? Anything else?
Oh, we're going to republish a great book that was done in the 1970s and expand it on Matamidi. Expand on Wildwood and, of course, all the speakeasies and the gangsters that roamed around.
Whoa, Bob Barker, Dillinger, they hung around, didn't they? Huh?
Creepy Carpus.
Creepy. Elvin.
And we're going to expand all of that to include more modern times, what has gone on in modern media. It's going to be great. Absolutely fantastic.
Wow, 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 Brent. And, of course, you are the author of a couple of books.
They're fantastic. Yep, you can find them at a great bookstore across the
street. What
would
the title be? Can you remember the title?
Well,
of
one of them is Stillwater, The Next Generation. Mm-hmm. You can pick that up at the Valley Bookseller.
Excellent, excellent. And another book?
And just your one brain? On Stillwater recently about from... The Images of America from Arcadia.
They're both very good. I'll say it for you because they are, Brent.
Thank you.
Brent Peterson, Executive Director, Top Banana at the Washington County Historical Society. Brent, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You got my check for my re-upping my membership there?
Oh, I think I did.
Don't spend it all in one place.
Okay,
pal. Thank you very much, everybody. Happy Super Bowl to you. Please join us on Monday right after the news at noon for the All Request Show. Thank you. Bye-bye.